Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
While Chicago adjusts to working at home, the Score is there for you.
I appreciate the tone that you guys have taken and wish more would follow suit. Keep it up.
You guys give us a chance to take a break, and that's what we all need right now.
Thank you for the distraction from the coronavirus. I appreciate what you guys are doing.
We are Chicago's number one sports station, 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station, WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score! Mully and Hall, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
We're going to take a look at Bears' new tight end, 6'7", 265-pound, five-time Pro Bowler, Jimmy Graham. Jimmy Graham is lined up next to the right tackle in a two-point stance. His route path is going to take him out to the flat. As soon as he runs away from the defensive back covering him, he recognizes pressure from the middle of the defense. He turns it upfield, turns himself into a big receiver at the goal line for the touchdown catch.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Our thanks to the Chicago Bears YouTube channel for that cut of our buddy Tom Thayer breaking down Jimmy Graham. And he's obviously one of the guys that is getting no support on your poll, David. And that's
not
a surprise.
It's not a surprise, Mully, but he's getting next to no support. He's barely registering. Now, 2.6% of the voters believe that he'll have the biggest impact on the 2020 season. A guy that Tom Thayer last week described as a mismatch problem in the red zone. A guy that's sort of a specialist at this stage of his career. Do you think that people are getting caught up on the money more than they are the possibility with Jimmy Graham?
Yeah, I think that all anybody looks at is, why did you overpay him? Why, you know, who was the other suitor? Why did you have to give him that kind of money? Because it affects what you do. I don't think people are looking at what the contribution might be. I think the sad reality is that I'm not sure you can run the scheme they want to run without a tight end. That's why they got nine of them. You need that U tight end in order to run that scheme, period, end of story. So now you got a guy who's had success. He's an older guy. He hasn't had recent success. He didn't have success with Aaron Rodgers, but they're convinced that he could be the guy. So they gave him money, which they didn't have to give him, because they want him here and they want him happy, and he seems delighted because he's being treated with respect by a guy that was with him in New Orleans. So I understand the backdrop of it, and I wouldn't choose him either as the most important player, but he is thus far the weapon that they've added this offseason in terms of their offense. The quarterback is going to be the most important player because he touches the ball on every play. I told you, I liked Robert Quinn the minute they got him. I thought, I understand they're paying him, again, like he's in the prime of his career when he's probably on the tail end of it, right? They're paying him like he's 4 or 5 years younger than he is. But nonetheless, He is a professional football player. He is going to give you an honest effort, and he's going to be a danger on opposite Khalil Mack. And you didn't have that. Khalil Mack is the highest paid player, defensive player in the NFL. That still holds up. So why don't you want the most out of him? And if Robert Quinn can help you get more out of Mack, or he can take advantage of Mack's presence when he's getting double and triple team on every play, doesn't that make you better? Don't you understand why people would support that?
That's what's interesting about your point, is that you're not necessarily saying Quinn is going to have the biggest impact from a statistical standpoint, because he can have an impact on a game by having others have great games, and he's going to make Khalil Mack better. Because Robert Quinn, I think what people who aren't familiar with him, he's going to command a lot of attention. Now, he's not going to command Khalil Mack-like attention, but if he doesn't, he will make those plays. But eventually, if he starts to make some noise, then even if it's just the way that you choose to block that front seven or that pass rush, somebody else is going to benefit from his presence. And that's kind of, I think, what's interesting about your overall point, is that that defense becomes more dangerous across the front because of the one guy that you added. Because, frankly, I don't know that any offensive coordinators, you know, lost any sleep over how to block Leonard Floyd. You know, they just didn't.
No. He set the edge. He's probably a better run stopper than this guy is. But you don't pay people to do that.
No, you don't. And you don't change games by the way that you set the edge. That's pretty much what you're expected to do if you're a first-round draft pick. If that's the minimum, you better be able to stop the run. You better be able to be an efficient defensive outside linebacker. And he was. And he did a lot of those things really well. But Quinn's explosive. And Mack is explosive. And Hicks is explosive. And Trevathan, is the reason he's here is because he's more explosive than Nick Kwiatkowski was. That's what the Bears are looking for. They need those takeaways again. That makes your offense better, too, because you're scoring points, you're getting leads, and you can function differently offensively if you're not always playing from behind.
No shadow of a doubt, David. I think that it's an important thing to keep in mind, because, again, you're trying to maximize everything, and you're really also trying to make sure that you give your cornerbacks a chance, right? They lost a corner. They cut a corner for money. They lost a safety. Again, it's a money decision. So you now are left to try to patchwork a little bit in your defensive backfield. And you know, when you give a guy a one-year, million-dollar tryout contract, it doesn't matter where he was drafted. That is not showing an unbelievable amount of confidence in that player. So I can't get too worked up about that, because the front seven should be absolutely overpowering.
So you mentioned that there's 9 tight ends under contract, and it's kind of funny because we had Ben Broniker on last week, Mully, and I asked him, a Harvard guy, if he could name every one of them, because it's that hard to remember who's on the Bears roster at that position. And I just wonder, though, because they have added Graham, because they do have 9 tight ends, don't you still expect them to add a 10th? Wouldn't you be surprised if they get through the draft and they haven't drafted a tight end?
You know, I don't know, man. I think that this guy's their tight end. I think that, you know, I don't, what are they, why are they collecting so many tight ends, right? Trey Burton had success in Philadelphia when Foles was there as the quarterback. Does this allow him to stick around, or could you save the money and get rid of him? I mean, you got nothing out of him. You went into free agency and you spent a lot of money and you got nothing for it. They are obviously taking shot after shot at that position, because, again, I'm not sure that you can operate without it. And you it's kind of one of these deals where they have to get something out of that position, so they're going with an old guy. They tried going with a third string guy that was ready to bust out, and that blew up in their face. They tried drafting a guy, and that blew up in their face. They're not looking for anyone to block. They're not looking for that position to help the offensive line. They're looking to get somebody to play the U spot so they can stretch the field and get third downs and perhaps even score a touchdown here or there.
I just don't see how, if you go out and you get Jimmy Graham and you make the commitment that the guaranteed money represents, I don't see a role for Trey Burton on this team. I just don't know why he's still on the roster if you're looking at what you're needing to pay him, because he's a duplicate. I don't know that he's insurance, because you don't, you know, insurance typically is, that comes from players who you figure are going to be healthy and available. And if there's one question about Trey Burton, it's been his health and availability. So I don't know that you can count on that. So if you can save money by shedding that contract, I think that the Bears probably should do that. I think it would be disappointing to me if they don't draft a tight end. Now, I don't know that they have to go, you know, and satisfy those people that are like Dustin and I, who have mentioned Cole Kmet makes sense in the second round. But somewhere in that draft, if you ready to come in there to try to develop, you need a blocker. Molly, I know that they don't, you know, commit to the running game, but you still need somebody at that position who might be a new body to block.
Is Adam Shaheen going to be kept around? Has he been cut yet? You start talking about, you know, again, we're looking at the roster and we're looking at the additions. Mm-hmm. Who's gone? Who did they get rid of at that position? They got nine guys under contract. So obviously, Shaheen is talented. What are you going to do about him? So you're going to get rid of, I mean, I got no problem with them cutting him. I got no problem with them cutting Trey Burton. I'm not making a pitch for the guy. I just wonder if they're going to, you know, they're going to need that money at some point. I wonder if they're waiting to see how they all look when you get to camp, or how healthy they are, or whatever. I don't know. I don't know what the benefit is cutting them now as opposed to cutting them then. It's just confounding to me.
There also might be some advantage to the same idea we apply to Nick Foles makes sense for the Bears because of the elimination of the offseason program, and there's going to be compressed right. training camp, and you're going to need guys who are familiar with the system and guys who have executed the scheme. And Trey Burton from Philadelphia to here, that's the reason he fit in here, right? He was so appealing because of his knowledge of the offense. So maybe that gets him, you know, a new start. Maybe that buys him more time. I don't know, but I do think that these are very similar players. And if you have two finesse tight ends, then you really haven't committed to being a power running team the way that we always talked about last year. And what did Olin Kreutz always say is that, you know, you want to run the football. Look at the roster. If you're not constructed to be that kind of a football team, don't complain, you know, that you're not running the football, because they never really had any intention to. And so they still don't have a fullback. They don't have a tight end, a new tight end that can block. So I don't know if that commitment, it sounds good, but we haven't really seen them build the roster that way.
The commitment to the run was in our own minds. It had nothing to do with what was actually happening with the Bears. I mean, you know, okay, you'd complain about it and ask about it, and the guy would be like, yeah, okay, run the ball. And he would throw you a bone and run the ball 19 times or 20 times. That's not the way he wants to run his offense. That's not what he's interested in doing. He will run the ball if the pass sets up the run. But everything that the head coach, offensive coordinator / play caller wants to do is strictly run the scheme that he believes is the best in football, that he feels was got the U.S. grade stamp of approval from the Super Bowl last year. And he wants to be able to do his thing. So you can't go get Tom Brady and bring him in because he doesn't fit what you are doing. You can't go get Phillip Rivers and bring him in because he doesn't know your scheme. So you do go get Nick Foles because you can fit him into what you want to do, not because you're going to build something around him. Now, he is a different player. Don't get me wrong. He's not Mitch. He's not going to be running that RPO stuff, because he's not a guy that runs around, and he's more of a stationary target. He's probably a better athlete than we give him credit for, but they're not going to be running the ball with him. They're not going to be concentrating on that. So it's a different, you know, we have to come around to what this guy is going to do, mm-hmm. or we're just going to frustrate the hell out of ourselves.
Fair enough. Hey, Molly, 847 listener checks in on the Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin text line, says, guys, I'm from Dallas, and I'm a Cowboys fan as well as a Bears fan. I watched every Robert Quinn snap, and he was an absolute beast.
So, yeah, I think the guy's a good player. I do. I think he's a professional football player. In other words,
he's going to make Leonard Hakeem Floyd. Hicks better. He's going to make Mac better. He's going to make everybody better. It's going to be, they're going to be a problem for a lot of offensive lines.
David, the morning they signed him, I said Mac could be defensive player of the year again. That's
I remember that.
That's the way I look at it. So, I mean, I really think it's that important to get him another pass rusher. So I hope our Dallas fan is correct. 312-644-6767. I'm sorry, I cut you off. What were you going to say?
No, I have another texter at 312 checks in, says, they're not going to run the ball. Don't be stupid, David. Okay.
But I really don't think they are, and I'm not telling you to, but I just think that the whole running game thing might be in our own minds, right?
I don't think it's stupid questions. That's ridiculous.
It's not in the coach's mind. All right, we're going to bring in Josh Cooley, and we're going to talk to him next. He is the author of, well, I guess would we call him the ghostwriter? No, he is the contributing writer of Believe It, which is the autobiography of the new Bears quarterback, Nick Foles. So we can talk to Josh Cooley about the process of writing the book with Foles and what the guy is like and what he learned from doing that. We'll discuss it with him next. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Fourth and goal. And they're going to snap it. And it's Trey Burton who throws, caught. Foles, touchdown. How do you figure? They go to the very, very, very back of the playbook for the touchdown.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Yeah, the Bears got themselves a Super Bowl winning quarterback, and we are delighted to welcome in Josh Cooley. He wrote the autobiography of Nick Foles. The book is called Believe It, and he joins us on the Al Pamani Ford hotline, Al Pamani Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Josh. How are you?
Morning, Josh.
Great. Great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Have you seen any increase in book sales since he signed with the Bears?
Well, you know, it's funny. I helped him write the book, but all that information actually goes to Nick because he's technically the author, and I was just officially listed as a contributing writer. So it's funny how those things work.
You know, Josh, we talk about Nick Foles obviously coming into Chicago as a quarterback, and he is a professional football player. But it seems from reading what you've written and knowing him as you do, the bedrock of everything starts with his faith, and he's been pretty open about that. Is that the Nick Foles that we're going to get to know here in Chicago? Do you think that will continue?
Oh, absolutely. Everything starts with his faith, and he's firmly committed to his Christian faith, and that's really what drives him, which is one of the reasons that I wanted to do the book with him. I love that about him. He's deeply committed to his faith and his family, and the men around him. You know, what you see is what you get with Nick, and he's just a really genuine individual. And so I think Chicago is in for a real treat.
How did you get into this project with him? What is your relationship like with him? How did you guys meet?
Yeah, it was just a really neat story. So we originally got connected through a magazine story that I was doing on him and about five other players on the 2017 Eagles season. It was called Bible Study Magazine. That was the name of the publication. So it was really just a one-off magazine story I was doing on them. I started doing that in the spring of 2017, and I was so impressed with Nick's faith and these other guys. So it would have been Carson Wentz, Trey Burton, and a couple other guys. So as I got into that story, I thought, wow, these guys are really rich in their faith, their knowledge of Scripture, and so forth. So I pitched a book idea to another publisher called New Growth Press, and that led to a book called The Biggest Win that came out also in the summer of 2018, right around the time that Believe It came out. So as I actually I finished that book, the rough draft of that book, before Believe It, and then once you know the guys won the Super Bowl, I texted Nick and said, you know, hey, it was actually the day that they were on the Super Bowl parade in Philly, and I said, hey, I know you've got a lot of stuff going on, but you just won the Super Bowl, you won the MVP. Would you be interested in doing an autobiography, a memoir? And, you know, he was doing all the late night TV shows and stuff, and so he was really busy. He got back to me about a week later, and he said, yeah, let's talk. And so that started things off there. And then we really sat down with his agent and Tyndale, the publisher for Believe It, and started working through that in March of 2018. But I had formed a friendship with him, you know, about a year earlier, starting with that magazine article. So it was just really neat the way it all worked out.
Josh, we know where Nick's career is headed, but I guess, can you help us understand where it turned in terms of he was ready to leave football? I think he was on his way to a camping trip, and he was just coming off a really difficult experience, I think, in St. Louis, and he reached out to Andy Reid, and it seems like, well, you can take it from there, because that's when everything began to change for Nick Foles.
Yeah, you know, for Nick, everything is, as for a lot of people, but everything is very personal, and he was really trying to, the way he tells it, he was trying to establish who he was as a person. Things were, for him, it was too much football, meaning he was feeling like everything was about Nick the football player, and it was becoming too much of his identity, he felt like he was losing himself as Nick the person, and for him that was not only just an individual thing but also a spiritual thing, and his, you know, for his Christian faith, and so he just had to remove himself from football for a little bit, and he was ready to walk away from that because he didn't want to lose himself as a person and as a man of faith, and put football on too high of a pedestal. And I think, you know, that's important for all of us, no matter what we do for a living or anything, as letting what we do or those things in our life get too important to, you know, to set those things up too high in our lives. We have to remain true to ourselves. And so for him, it was taking a step back, seeing what's most important to me. It's my faith, it's my family. And so that camping trip of just getting away from everything and unplugging really helped reset him. And when he realized that football was not the most important thing, then ironically that helped him be able to go back and say, hey, I can play football once again, knowing that I'm not doing this for football, I'm not doing this for the money, I'm not doing this for championships, but I can do it as a way to help other people. I can share my faith through it, and I can use my gifts and skills that God has given me for the greater good, but I'm not doing this solely because I'm only a football player, if that makes sense.
You're listening to Mully and Haw on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We're talking to Josh Cooley. He is the contributing writer of Nick Foles' autobiography. And it's an interesting book because obviously you get into all the Philadelphia stuff. It's a book that is following the Super Bowl, and you do that very well. But the first part of the book, I think what's extraordinary is the number of obstacles that he has to overcome in his life. And it seems like at every turn, he's facing some issue, some injury, something that has gone awry. And I found it fascinating, the idea that he starts his college career at Michigan State, and he's sitting there with Kirk Cousins and Brian Hoyer and this quarterback room, and it doesn't work for him. He doesn't like Michigan State. He can't handle it, and he goes into his truck, and he sits in his truck and says a prayer because he's seen his mother pray so much. And that's almost like the epiphany he has, where he becomes kind of more of a man of Christ.
Yeah, that's right. So he takes a lot of that in his spiritual journey from his mom, for sure. And that was a really watershed moment for him as a man and as a Christian. So that's absolutely correct. And you know, another thing was just he didn't like the cold. He talks about that too, where he wanted to be in a place where he felt much more comfortable, just in the warmth. And so, you know, if he couldn't find a place that wanted him in Texas, well, Arizona fit the bill there too. So he went to Arizona.
But, wait till he sees Soldier Field. My God,
no kidding.
Yeah, well, that's going to certainly be an adjustment. But hey, there's some warm days up there eventually, right?
Yeah, and we know that he could win a playoff game at Soldier Field when it is pretty cold out, because we saw it a couple years ago, Josh. And, you know, when you talk about the Philadelphia climate in terms of the fans and the media expectations, it can be a tough town, and so can being the quarterback in Chicago. How did his experience in Philadelphia, even it went well, but he had two stints there, so he knows both ends of the spectrum. How do you think that toughened him, if that's the right word, but how do you think that maybe prepared him for what he's about to face in Chicago, coming in with the expectation is that he's going to make this team a playoff team?
Yeah. Well, you know, we talked about the cold, but obviously Philly gets cold too. and just those media and those fan expectations. Obviously, I think we all know that Philly has a reputation for being a very tough town. They'll love you, and they'll also hate you depending on how things go. But he really won over Philly. I mean, he's an icon there. He has a statue outside, you know, the stadium. So he's got that in him. But, you know, one thing he says is you can't worry about what people think. That was one of the first things he said even before we started the formal interviews for the book. You can't worry about what people think, and I think that's a common thread because the nature of the NFL is so fickle. And so I think that's a running theme. You know, when he stepped in, when Carson Wentz got hurt in that Super Bowl season of 2017, he played pretty well in the Rams game when he first stepped in for Carson, but then the next couple games they didn't go so well before they entered the playoffs. And so one thing I remember him telling me was right before he entered the playoffs, you know, the media was really getting on him. The fans were kind of, you know, murmuring. And his dad told him, hey, listen, you know, right now I think you are the most dangerous player in the world, because when everybody is counting you out, that's when you're most dangerous. I've seen you do this time and time again in high school, in college, and so forth. When your back is against the wall, you become really dangerous. And Nick just has that kind of quality in him. You can look all throughout his career and see that, certainly in the Super Bowl season. Then he did it again when he came in for Carson, and the Eagles had a losing record, and he brought him back to the playoffs there in the 2018 season. So when his back is against the wall, you never know what he's going to pull out of his sleeve. So it'll be interesting to see what he does this year and this coming year. But I would never count out Nick Foles.
Josh, thanks a ton for the time. Hopefully you'll be writing another chapter after the Bears win a Super Bowl. You can redo the whole damn book. Thanks so much. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, Josh. That is Josh Cooley. He is the author, the contributing writer of the autobiography. He put the words together. It's a well-written book, and you know, I think, David, there's a lot in there, one of which is a comment about, I think the first chapter is called Defining Moments, and he talks about, you know, how he's viewed, and he says in there that he's viewed as a backup, and no one wants to be, no one aspires to be a backup, is the direct quote. So I don't know how he's viewed right now, but I don't think he views himself as a backup.
Well, he has good self-awareness because he realized the minute he became Super Bowl MVP and he went back to Philadelphia, given his contract, he was immediately trade bait. And yeah, he embraced that idea. So this is a guy who knows where he is, and he's going to come into Chicago understanding what's expected out of him.
Yeah, he's been up, he's been down. We'll find out how he is with the Bears. We've got Mike Florio in the on-deck circle. Can't wait to talk to Mike. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
He got game! He got game! He get better and better!
He got
better! He got
game,
BB!
He got
BB!
NFL Insider, Mike Florio.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Mike Florio joins us on the Al Pamani Ford Hotline. Al Pamani Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
You know, I've morning, always Mike. Wondered, is it Al space Pamonte or is it just Al Pamonte?
I've always
wondered that and I've never asked.
First name Two Al, words. Last name right. Fiance. Yeah,
because it sounds like, I mean, if you say it, you get used to saying it and you hear Al Pamonte, I'm just thinking that's the last name. So it's Al Pamonte.
Yep. Yep.
Got it.
Yes.
Thank
you. I'll try to clean it up.
And no, you can't have that 20 seconds of your life back.
You know, Michael, I'm just wondering, you have been dealing with this internal commute for a number of years now. I'm starting to develop like a left knee issue as I walk down the stairs two flights to get to my utility room. How do you pull it off? How do you make it happen?
Well, the biggest challenge is avoiding the refrigerator. That takes I used to go to a law office and I didn't keep any food there. And but now all the food is five steps away. So that took a while to get to the point where I wasn't constantly going to the kitchen to get something else to eat. But I feel guilty because my life hasn't changed, and I understand how people are struggling and people are suffering, and people who can work at home, that's great. And I don't know what's worse, not having a job and being at home, or having a job and having to go out and work at a grocery store, drive vehicles, be involved in, you know, the heroic healthcare community. I mean, it's just a time of extreme hardship, and I keep telling myself we're part of the distraction, we're part of the diversion, we're part of the normalcy, and I hope we can keep doing that indefinitely.
And Mike, I found it fascinating, your idea to have NFL players sort of work at home, your idea to kind of create a football biosphere, if you will, and I know that you wrote about this, you've talked about it in interviews. How would you explain your plan and how realistic it might be?
It's not realistic at all, and I'm the first one to admit that, but it's an example of what the league needs to be doing now. They need to be thinking about every possible scenario. They need to look at every date on the calendar between now and Labor Day weekend and ask themselves, if we can't get back to work until this day, June 1, June 15, June 20, July 10, whatever it may be, what is our plan for getting in a full season? And if they are determined to get the TV money, you at least put on the radar screen the possibility of taking everyone to a remote location that they can ensure is not going to be touched by the coronavirus. I don't believe that's practical. I don't believe that's possible. I think the better chance is just playing in empty stadiums, testing the players on a regular basis. I think the testing methods and the speed of the turnaround will be much improved by the time we get to September. There's talk of having quick and easy pinprick, finger prick testing for the antibody to see if you've already had it so you don't have to worry about it. I mean, those things are in the pipeline, and that will make it easier to pull off football season with teams being in their usual locations. But my position continues to be the NFL needs to have people who are thinking about this all the time and identifying a biosphere option and just at least working through the practicalities, the impracticalities, at least to go through the exercise so they're ready for every possible outcome. What I've heard from a couple of different people, everyone at the league office now is focused on pulling off the draft, and they'll worry about the offseason programs after that, they'll worry about the season after that. I'd like to think they've got the capacity to do both. And throwing out that idea mainly was an effort to kind of pull the ripcord on the lawnmower to get the NFL to start thinking about these things.
And the league is, they have already gone out and invited, what, the top 50 players to figure out a way to be on a video call with them during the draft. So they're planning on being able to cut to all these players sitting around waiting to be drafted. We hear this guy's on the phone. They're going to do all that. They're just going to do it remotely.
Yeah, it's just like any cable news channel you may be watching now, or if you watch ESPN or any of the sports channels, it's a bunch of people wearing AirPods who are broadcasting from, at times, very curious choices of background in their homes. Sometimes I wonder, if that's the best you got, maybe you should consider a different line of work, right? but yeah, I think that's what it's going to be. And I think logistically it's going to be a challenge, but it's going to be a bunch of people in their homes. And it very well could be, as Peter King pointed out yesterday in Football Morning in America, the commissioner from his home. Everybody is broadcasting from their homes. Lester Holt is broadcasting the NBC Nightly News from his home. You couldn't tell by the background that they have, but a lot of that stuff is going on. A lot of green screens out there that are allowing people to create the impression they're not at home when they are at home. And I think that's exactly what it's going to be. I think there's not going to be a desk with talking heads. If there are, there's going to be two of them. They're going to be at each end of it like a giant table in a mansion where it's like, can you pass the salt? And you have to walk 50 feet to get it down to the other end. I mean, I don't know if I mentioned this to you guys last week. There was an interview of John Elway by the Broncos website, and it looked like he and the person interviewing him were getting ready to play tennis. That's how far apart they were for the interview. But that's what it would have to be. Or it's just right. Going to be people at home or alone in a studio. And it's going to be the highest rated draft ever because it's all we have in this vast wasteland of March and April with no sports.
So when you look at how the preparation has changed because of the circumstances, Mike, and how much it puts a premium on tape evaluation over this interpersonal communication and the in-person interviews, who does it benefit most? I mean, the teams that obviously have the proven track record of having good evaluators of talent, but does a team or two come to mind when I ask that question?
Well, I mean, you think of the Ravens. You think of the Patriots. The teams that traditionally draft well are going to draft well under any set of circumstances. You take away pro day workouts, you take away private visits, they're going to find another way to get the information. You know, one of the things that's been overlooked in all of this, every team can contact every prospect up to 3 times per week, per prospect, for up to an hour per conversation. So there is an opportunity there to really spend an unlimited amount of time. Well, 1 hour per time, three hours per week. But when you consider all the prospects, there aren't enough hours in the week to talk to all these guys. So there's a way to skin the cat without being able to sit across from the guy at a table and really look into his eyes and get a feel for who you're really dealing with. And, you know, Chris Sims and I were spitballing about this yesterday. If there's a guy that's got reliability concerns, punctuality concerns, you just tell him, we're going to call you every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 11 a.m. And let's see if he answers the phone. And let's see how groggy he is when he answers the phone. Let's see how he communicates in that setting. You know, the teams are going to adapt. The players need to adapt. The guys that I feel the worst for are the guys with medical issues because there's no way right. to properly clear them the way that you would with that combine recheck. The guys with red flags would always go back to Indianapolis in mid-April to get checked out again. That's gone now. So you're going to have real risk with Tua Tagovailoa or anyone else that's recovering from surgery as to whether or not that guy truly is ready to go.
It, you know, what's interesting, Michael, is I do believe that there has been a certain amount of kind of paralysis through analysis with the draft where we just... you know, we need the 15th interview to find out if, you know, ask some stupid question about parentage or something. We've seen that happen. So I think it might help if you're just studying the tape. And I get it. It's hard to project the smaller school guys, but sometimes the story is right there in front of you, and you get caught up in things that are almost irrelevant. And, you know, I know no one wants to draft a criminal, but other than that, I think it's fairly obvious who some of these guys are from the way they play.
Well, and I think when all these devices are available to teams, teams feel compelled to use them all because they assume that their competitors are all using them all. So you end up spending the time and the money going from campus to campus for pro day workouts, going for private workouts, bringing guys in. When at the end of the day, you know, I feel like so much of what happens prior to the draft is building a file so that when you draft a guy and he's a bust and the boss wants to know why in the hell we drafted this guy, you can go back to that file and you can point to all the positive reasons why you thought the guy was going to be good. And for the guys that you pass on, the Lamar Jacksons of the world who become superstars, you want to have that file you can go back to when the boss wants to know why in the hell didn't we take Lamar Jackson? Why did we take him instead of Josh Rosen? Then you can go back to it and you can say, here's why we didn't. And it's so much CYA, but I think that's what a lot of that stuff that gets done from February to April becomes. It becomes a massive 32 business exercise in CYA.
Mike, you mentioned Tua, and I agree that this could possibly hurt him, but he's also been fully cleared and ready to compete without restrictions, according to his agent. That may concern some teams. Maybe there's another, you know, more to this later this in April. Does he drop out of the top five because the agent is, you know, Lee Steinberg's pretty good and he's pretty convincing, and you wonder if this is something that can he talk Tua into the top five?
You know, in 2011, that was the year where there was no offseason program, but free agency came after the draft, so the draft had even greater importance, and teams that needed quarterbacks were reaching. You had Jake Locker at number 8, Blaine Gabbert at number 10, Christian Ponder at number 12. All three of them, all due respect, stunk, but teams were desperate for quarterbacks. And will there be a team in the top 10 that doesn't feel great about its current starter, that wants a guy that maybe they can sit on the bench for a year and they see the possibility of getting that franchise guy? See, the argument I made last year with the Cardinals and Kyler Murray was the Cardinals had to take Kyler Murray because it's better to swing and miss on a potential franchise quarterback than to pass on a potential franchise quarterback, because the financial investment isn't what it was before 2011, where you were putting yourself in a huge hole if you swung and missed on a potential franchise quarterback. So, you know, Tua Tagovailoa has that potential. The concern, though, is three lower body injuries during college. If you have those at a lower level of the sport, chances are you're going to have those injuries, if not worse, at the higher level of the sport. And one thing that Chris Sims has been pointing out when we talk about Tua on PFT Live, when you watch his game film, there are a lot of moments in a given game where he takes a hit that makes you say, oh my God, is he going to get up? And you can't take hits like that at the NFL level, because you will more often than not be able to get up.
A great point. Michael, we'll let you go. There is a conference call today. The owners are going to be talking to each other. We know that they're going to approve pretty much everything that's on the table, the expanded playoffs, the networks. You already have reported on that. Is there anything that could go awry? Is this just a formal type thing or what?
I'd be stunned if they don't grab the money. They've wanted to expand the playoffs for years, but they knew there was talk 4 or 5 years ago that it was coming, but they knew they couldn't do it without the approval of the union, so they wanted to wait to do it as part of the next CBA. So my guess is they wouldn't have made this something they pushed for in the CBA unless they knew they were going to have at least 24 votes. So I think that's going to sail through. I think the real question is, how aggressively will the owners on this call challenge the league for answers about the potential doomsday scenarios if they really are focused on the draft and not worrying about anything else? Hopefully this call will be when enough owners say, hey, you can do two things at once, and if you can't, we'll find people who can. Come up with all of our plans, come up with all of the scenarios, come up with all of the ideas for ensuring that we have a football season, depending on how this pandemic continues to unfold.
Michael, thanks a ton. Great talking to you as always.
Take care, guys.
Thanks, Mike. You too.
That is Mike Florio. Always a joy. We want to thank everyone connected to the program. Thanks for calling, texting, emailing.
Most of all, thank you for listening.
Yeah, and thanks to Dustin and Kevin and Ray. Great work as always, guys, and we appreciate it. And stay tuned.
Would you guys get all your minutes?
Take care of yourself, Dave. Mully.
Mully and Haw on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.